This is Jim Tudor with Zeke Film. I'm here with Max Foisy of Max on Movies, and we are here to talk about what came out of San Diego Comic-Con.
And as you would expect, when we talk about the big news out of San Diego Comic-Con, we're going to start with legendary filmmaker Oliver Stone.
What was Oliver Stone doing at Comic-Con? This is obviously not his natural stomping ground.
No, it's not. And it was interesting. He brought Joseph Gordon-Levitt out with him, and they talked about their new film, Snowden. Of course, it was to a packed audience, though, because he is Oliver Stone, and he's made some incredible and divisive movies.
That's what he does.
And that's why apparently what he's done here with this movie, Snowden. The most interesting thing about him being at Comic-Con was that somebody asked him a question. I think they meant it as a joke, but I'm not sure if you've ever seen Oliver Stone interviewed. He's not really a jokester.
No.
And so somebody said something like, "Hey, are you playing Pokemon Go?" And instead of just laughing, the crowd did, he took the question seriously and said, not only am I not playing Pokemon Go, but none of you should be playing it.
Ooh.
He was pointing out that... That Pokemon Go, of course, it was built by another nation. It's a video game built by another country,
right?
And it has mapping capabilities that uses your phone to map your general surroundings. So he says, what a better intel program than using another country's own citizens to tell you where everything is? And people kind of nervously laughed about this and said, okay, the old guy is taking it too seriously. I read that transcript and said, you know, he's got a point.
Yeah.
And it takes somebody like Oliver Stone to think outside the box to say, why are we willingly giving all this information about our locations to whoever's taking it? We don't even know who's taking it. It's not Nintendo. They didn't create this game. They're hosting it, but they didn't create it.
So it's a hard blast of truth for all those Comic-Con geeks.
Yes. Who I'm sure, right when that panel was over, fired up their phone and tried to catch the next Pikachu.
Oh, sure. But not Oliver Stone.
No, not Oliver Stone. Stone looks interesting. I think it's an interesting story. I can't think of a better director to tell that story. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know, he's a great, great actor. He's chasing that Oscar. I'm not sure how the Academy is going to feel about this movie, though. I feel like a lot of people are going to be hands-off about Snowden.
Well, they already pulled Snowden out of last year's awards race, so that's telling right there as far as their confidence in it. But... yeah, maybe his next film will be the Pokemon Go conspiracy.
Can you imagine, an all-star Oliver Stone cast with Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Cruise shot in a natural-born killer / U-turn style with Squirtles running around? I mean, I say sign me up for Oliver Stone's Pokemon Go.
I cannot imagine that, Max.
I can't. I actually have it in my head right now.
You just did.
All right.
Let's move on to Marvel. We'll get a little more conventional with what people expect to find at Comic-Con. The Marvel Studios was there in full force with a lot of things.
A lot.
And let's talk about this TV show Legion on FX. Any thoughts on that?
Are you familiar with the character Legion?
No.
Okay, well, a lot of people aren't. Now, Fox owns the rights to most of the mutants in the Marvel Universe. This deal was struck years before Marvel Studios was actually a thing.
Right.
And because the X-Men movies have become very popular, Fox doesn't want to give them back. They're not like Sony, which had failure after failure with Spider-Man and said, okay, Marvel, fine, you can have Spidey back. So because of that, Fox is trying to monetize the X-Men property as much as they can. There's no shortage of mutants. It's kind of like Pokemon Go. They're everywhere.
Right.
And Professor X has this son named Legion, who is supposedly the most powerful mutant of all time. He can project his powers in other people. He can suck powers from other people. He's sort of an ill-defined character, but he's also quite miserable. He was sick for most of his run, confined to a bed. So most of his adventures or exploits took place on a spiritual plane. He would project his consciousness, basically. Very out there idea, right?
Yes.
I'm not sure why you would adapt it for TV, seeing as how it's a tragic, depressing story. But Fox had two television projects in development centering on the X-Men. They had Legion and they had Hellfire Club. They had Hellfire Club until I'm sure some executive sat down and read what that was and said, no, we can't do this on TV.
No.
And so that one's been canceled, but they're still moving forward with Legion, which I think will go the way of Constantine, the DC Comics property, which is pretty unadaptable as well. It'll be on for a couple episodes and then be canceled. Nobody wants to watch such a depressing show week after week on TV.
Yeah, it does look very dark and dreary. The trailer that was released to the web, I found it incoherent. Most of it takes place in a sanitarium type of facility. I don't know. I agree with you. This is probably on and gone.
Well, you know, and Fox doesn't really know what to do with the X-Men franchise. I mean, of course, you know, Bryan Singer is milking it with X-Men Apocalypse. They say we're going to get one more of those. But we'll get to actual Marvel Studios properties in a little bit. I wanted to talk a bit about Deep Space and boldly going. You know, our reviews of Star Trek Beyond are up right now.
That's
on
true.
Zeke Film, and you should read those. And what do you think about Star Trek Discovery? That's the title of the new ongoing television show.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Max. I don't have a whole lot of thoughts on Star Trek Discovery other than I'm just glad to see Star Trek is coming back to television where it began, and it's coming back to CBS where it began. Not conventional CBS, though. This is some sort of CBS All Access pay platform, correct?
Yeah, CBS All Access is going to be CBS's streaming service, which they're very excited about in the United States. However, outside of our fair country, Netflix is going to be streaming Star Trek Discovery for the rest of the world. So if you can contact Edward Snowden and get his Russian password for the Russian Netflix, you might be able to watch Star Trek Discovery that way. I agree with you. I'm happy it's coming back to TV. I'm not a Star Trek fan, really, but I do think that Star Trek belongs on television.
Exactly. Now, what else are you not a big fan of? Perhaps King Kong?
Yeah. Yes, I would say that, you know, it's funny. King Kong, boy. The first film, obviously, it's a landmark of cinema. You've got the remake with a gorgeous Jessica Lange, otherwise a really silly, silly movie. Jeff Bridges in that one as well.
Dark.
And then you have Peter Jackson's, I don't want to call it a self-indulgent movie, because every director's movie is self-indulgent. It's just you really got to see Peter Jackson kind of losing his mind there for about 15 hours. I think that's how long that version of King Kong lasted.
There was a 15-hour cut that came out on DVD.
There was.
That Peter Jackson's mom bought, that nobody else bought.
You know, Peter Jackson really centered on the love story, the tragic love story of King Kong. Kong Skull Island, which is a weird title. They should just call it Skong, or Skull Island, or Skong Island, I suppose.
Skong Island, who'd see that?
But this one seems to focus on Kong as monster more than lover, and I really liked the trailer. I think the trailer looks like a whole lot of fun. You've got Sam Jackson. You've got the biggest King Kong ever on screen. His face is ginormous. And it looks like Tom Hiddleston's in this. Tom Hiddleston, of course, famous for playing Loki in Marvel Universe. And his co-star is none other than the newly announced Captain Marvel.
Oh, yes. Brie Larson. Now, how amazing does this project sound? Transitioning from King Kong, of course. We'll move on to Captain Marvel, starring Brie Larson. This project announced from Marvel. I'm thrilled, Max. This is a spectacular actress with a great character.
You know, something that some of the great comic book writers of the 80s did is they took forgotten characters, because it was the only ones the editors would give them, and they revitalized them with amazing new life, basically. This is what Alan Moore did in the 80s when he couldn't get a comic book writing gig, and his editor goes, fine, you can have Swamp Thing, because we don't care about Swamp Thing. And then he writes these incredible books. Well, this is what happened. You know, Kelly Sue DeConnick is an amazing, amazing comic book writer, and they gave her the character of Ms. Marvel.
Right.
Now, Ms. Marvel has been famously one of the most mistreated women in comic book history. She's had her mind wiped. She's been assaulted. It's just her history is horrible. Ms. Marvel, I'd always disliked that character because she never had her own agency. It was just a horrible character. They gave that to Kelly Sue, who christened her Captain Marvel, and as the fans call her, Princess Sparklefist. And she instantly became one of my favorite Marvel Comics characters. If you've not read Kelly Sue DeConnick's run over the past 5 years on Captain Marvel, I highly recommend it. You can come over to my house and borrow the issues if you want.
I might.
But Carol Danvers is an incredible, incredible part. And I know that Marvel was looking at Rebecca Ferguson from the Mission Impossible films, and they were looking at Emily Blunt, who's had a long, complicated history with Marvel Studios. And they finally chose Brie Larson, who I think is just absolutely perfect casting. Marvel, they'll be remembered for casting their films more than anything else. They just have the best casting in the business.
And I very much agree with that. The casting is always so spot on with these films. And as they say in filmmaking, that's, you know, 80-90% of it right there. So that's something to look forward to. Captain Marvel, whenever that film is going to be made.
2018, I think. So a couple more years. I imagine she'll show up in something. Maybe Doctor Strange, who knows, you know. We'll talk about Doctor Strange in a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. But first, let's talk about another supernatural character in the Marvel world, Ghost Rider. We know Ghost Rider was the star of a couple of films played by Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. I have not seen any of those films. They do not have a great reputation.
They're not good. I've seen them.
This is a character that Marvel has, again, resecured the rights to, yes. And it's going to turn up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, you know, Marvel has been smart. You know, before they had their own studio, they were like, I don't know, license our characters, try to make us money. And then finally in 2008, when they said, no, we're going to do it ourselves, and we're going to launch our entire multi-billion-dollar corporation with a C to D level character named Iron Man that people have forgotten about.
Right.
Who, of course, now that seems silly to people because he's Iron Man. But all the properties that they had licensed out, Blade, The Punisher, Ghost Rider, there were movies made with these characters. Well, they either failed or people walked away from them. Marvel has all of those characters back. They've not used Blade yet, although there's some rumors. They used Punisher on Daredevil. Of course, Daredevil is one that they got back too.
Yeah.
And now they're using Ghost Rider on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been a frustrating show. When it's good, it's very good, and when it's bad, it's most of the time. But I still watch it, and I really like that they brought on Mockingbird, because Bobby Morris is a great, great character.
Agreed.
And with Ghost Rider, it's not going to be Johnny Blaze. So it's not the Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider. It's somebody else who in the comics I think was known as Vengeance. So this is interesting what Marvel's doing. They're bringing Ghost Rider on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but not the most famous Ghost Rider. So I wonder if they're saving Johnny Blaze for a movie one day. Because this is a different Ghost Rider. So that's who you'll see on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
The rumor I'd heard was that Netflix was going to develop a series about Ghost Rider. So maybe that's the Johnny Blaze angle. Who knows?
Yeah, the thing about Ghost Rider is it's Hellfire, can basically bless you with the chains and the bike. So anybody can be Ghost Rider. I think Jim Tudor was Ghost Rider in some other life.
Yeah, it was back in the 90s.
Yes. Well, we were all Ghost Rider in the 90s, weren't we?
He was very big, actually. Very big. Let's talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Now, I remember, Max, you are not a big fan of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, as it's now going to be known.
Yeah, I'm going to let you talk about this one. I'm the odd man out in the entire galaxy because I did not like Guardians of the Galaxy. I went to this special preview experience on the big screen where they showed the jailbreak scene and they gave us a free poster. And I loved that scene. And I was laughing. I thought, oh, these characters are great. And I was so hyped for it. And there's a lot of reasons why I didn't like that first movie. We don't have to get into them here. But I'm not excited for Guardians 2, even though they've cast Kurt Russell as Peter Quill's father.
Yeah.
So they're saying that, right? That's not a big spoiler. They're saying that he is Peter Quill's father.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up. Peter Quill's father is Kurt Russell. Now, here's another weird one that I'm trying to get my head around. Ego, the living planet.
Mm.
This is, in Marvel Comics, exactly as it sounds, a living planet.
Yes.
Named Ego.
Yes.
This is Kurt Russell's character.
Yes.
Apparently.
Yes.
Now, I kind of like, what? My mind was blown. And then I was anticipating, what is that? I guess it's a voice part a la Vin Diesel.
They've shown robes that he'll be wearing in a human form. So I'm not sure how James Gunn will get around that. But that's what they're doing for Guardians Part 2. I don't care. That's the thing. I don't care. Here's something that I was upset with the lack of connective tissue in that first Guardians movie with the rest of the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
With Guardians 2, something has become very clear. They have not told us when these events are happening. Every Marvel movie happens in real time, meaning Doctor Strange will happen in real time after Civil War.
Ah.
Meaning it takes place a couple of months after Civil War. All of the Marvel films so far have taken place in real time, meaning if you watch them in order of release, that's when they take place. Even the first Captain America, which, yes, I knew it takes place in 1941, but the end of it with him in Times Square happens in real time.
Sure.
So with Guardians, with them keeping that so close to the vest, is this in the future? Is this in the past? Why haven't... I don't know. I'm starting to believe that the Guardians franchise might be 30, 40, 50 years in the future.
Well, in the comics, it was 1,000 years in the future, wasn't it?
Well, what's strange is Thanos is still trying to get these Infinity Rings.
Right.
Or gems, rather.
Yes.
So how far in the future could it be?
I don't know.
Because he's still searching for it, unless he's just really bad at his job. Well, anyway, I don't like these movies.
These are interesting thoughts. I think you might be a little too off in nerd land with the speculation.
That's where I live.
One thing Marvel does, and they do it very well, they've proven, is they keep it simple. They give us just enough nerd content to satisfy those of us in the inner circle. But really, they specialize in making this stuff accessible and
they
fun.
They do. You're right. And we are going to end this talking about the DC movie universe, which I think is the very opposite of Marvel by design, meaning they're not really too concerned about making their movies accessible or fun, which so far has not really worked out for them, but I happen to be a fan of that. But anyway, I'm in Nerdland. Let's talk about Doctor Strange.
Okay. I'm looking forward to Doctor Strange. This is a film directed by...
Scott Derrickson.
Scott Derrickson, thank you. He's right on the tip of my tongue. Horror filmmaker Scott Derrickson getting to play in the big kid sandbox for the first time, much like James Gunn got to do with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, Doctor Strange, I've never really cared for this character. When I grew up reading Peter Parker stories in Spider-Man books, and whenever Doctor Strange would show up, I'm like, oh, here's this guy, Sorcerer Supreme. I hated him whenever he popped up. This movie, the first couple of trailers, looked very much like your standard Marvel origin story,
yes,
like Iron Man or like Ant-Man. Now, that's fine. That's what Marvel does well. But the Comic-Con trailer, and that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about everything that came out of San Diego Comic-Con, the new information. And this latest trailer, have you seen the latest trailer from San Diego Comic-Con?
I confess I have not.
Well, after we're done recording this, go over and watch it on your phone. It looks incredible. It has some Inception-ish visuals that we haven't seen in a big mainstream movie, and I think they might actually be going a bit further than just your standard origin story, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. I'm looking forward to what Marvel will do with Doctor Strange and how this character will be integrated into the rest of the Marvel world. He's a sorcerer.
Right.
That's new.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's very cool.
It is cool.
So, otherwise, the remaining Marvel... programs we have to talk about is Netflix.
Yeah, we'll do the quick hits on Netflix. Of course, Daredevil season 1 and season 2 were both really gigantic. Season 2 featured Elektra and the Punisher. The Punisher is getting his own series on Netflix. And Daredevil has also been greenlit for season 3. The other shows, of course, Jessica Jones has been greenlit for season 2. And then the other spinoffs, you've got Luke Cage. If you have not watched the Luke Cage trailer, you got to watch it. It's 2 minutes of Luke Cage basically beating people up in a hallway, which would not be all that spectacular, except it's set to the tune of Shimmy Shimmy Yaw by the Old Dirty Bastard. And so that is right up my alley, and that's just fantastic. You've also got Iron Fist, which is probably the Doctor Strange of the TV set, meaning it's over here on the, you know, he's a powerful white guy, but he's a sorcerer. So how are they, I wonder if there's going to have some connective tissue with Doctor Strange. We will see.
He's a mystical martial arts guy.
Exactly. And so just like they did with the Avengers on the big screen, all of these Netflix characters will come together for the street level Avengers, who of course are known as the Defenders. Will we see the Defenders on the big screen? Do not hold your breath. Big screen and TV don't get along, and I don't think this is going to change.
But wouldn't it be great if all these characters pop up, at least in the background of Infinity War?
It would be great, but Kevin Feige does not care about that. He's made it very clear that he says, we're concentrating on movies, we don't care about TV. So it would be great, but do not hold your breath. Enjoy the Defenders, because that's how you're going to see your heroes together.
And there is, out of Comic-Con, a graphics-based trailer for the Defenders, with no footage, just graphics, it's After Effects. It's intriguing, and it does get at this rumor that's been bubbling around that the villain of the Defenders might be the devil himself, Mephisto.
Which makes sense because of, Ghost Rider popping up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It is Mephisto who gives Ghost Rider his powers, and so they're bringing... I mean, I know that Netflix and ABC are separate, but still it's all in the Marvel Universe. The nice thing about the Defenders trailer is, after Daredevil premiered, and then instantly got a second season, the big rumors were that they were never going to do Defenders. They were just going to keep giving all the shows second seasons, third seasons. So the fact that Marvel's committing and saying we will see these characters together is kind of a big deal.
I'm really happy about it. Now, let's go across the street.
Yes.
To DC.
Let's do it.
The distinguished competition.
That's right.
Wonder Woman.
You pointed out earlier that I was in the minority by not enjoying Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm also in the minority by, on the whole, enjoying what DC has done on the big screen. I like Man of Steel. I enjoyed Batman v Superman. I'm excited for Suicide Squad. Now we're going to talk about Wonder Woman and the surprise trailer of Justice League, both of which dropped at San Diego Comic-Con. DC's mandate is to not be Marvel, and I think that for better or worse in the minds of their fans, they have succeeded. They're not concerned about making their films accessible. There's so much fan service for deep nerds in Batman v Superman, so much that I was losing my mind during the movie, but my pal next to me was like, I can't follow this, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
So I don't know if that gamble will pay off for them, but with Wonder Woman, they have possibly taken their first page from Marvel, meaning that they have made a film about optimism and hope. I don't think it's cribbing from Marvel as much as it is just understanding Diana Prince, because as I look at the Wonder Woman DVDs around your house right now,
yes,
Jim, that's what Diana's always been about. Is yes, she's a warrior, but she's a diplomat as well. This movie looks like Captain America: The First Avenger because it's a period piece. I love seeing superheroes in period pieces. There's a great scene where she's on the battlefronts of World War I, and it have all these old time rifles, and she's jumping in the air with her sword and her shield, and it looks spectacular. I can't say enough good things about this movie. I love that Patty Jenkins got a shot to make this.
Yeah.
She was supposed to make Thor: The Dark World,
right,
and much to Natalie Portman's chagrin, she was fired from that.
Mm.
So I'm very happy she gets to make this movie. It looks incredible.
I have high hopes for this. I'm not a Wonder Woman fan at all. I'm a Marvel guy. I have given Wonder Woman several chances in the comics, and I've just never quite picked up the book regularly. But that said, the fact that the first female superhero blockbuster feature film in this era of the superheroes is going to be Wonder Woman, it just feels right. That's right.
And the trailer looks fantastic. If you out there listening to the sounds of our voices are like Jim and have not been able to find that entry point to Wonder Woman, I highly recommend the DC animated movie that was written by Gail Simone, simply titled Wonder Woman. Carrie Russell does her voice. Alfred Molina is also in the movie. And that was my gateway drug into Wonder Woman. I was never a Wonder Woman fan either, even being a DC fan. I never really got the character. And that origin movie, the animated movie, is incredible. I went out and started reading Gail Simone's Wonder Woman run. And that's how now I'm, oh my God, I've got a ton of Wonder Woman stuff at home now. It's just an amazing trailer.
It's a very popular run. But and Wonder Woman herself is going to be part of the Justice League.
I'm shocked. This was the biggest shock for me at San Diego. That's why I wanted to end with this. This is the biggest shock that they have enough footage cut together that they were able to show something.
Zack Snyder, the director of Batman v Superman, is directing these pair of Justice League films.
Ah, well, you know, his producing partner, Deborah, his wife, has announced that the movie will simply be titled Justice League.
Okay.
That they are prepping a sequel, but it's no longer going to be parts 1 and 2.
Oh, good.
So they have backed away from that. Perhaps because Batman v Superman did not make $1 billion, and now they're like, let's just do this one at a time.
Right.
They do have, however, a script and resolutions, and they have an idea for that second film. Zack still says it's happening,
okay,
but this will not necessarily be a cliffhanger. It'll be a connective piece of tissue. Justice League's trailer, I did not enjoy as much as Wonder Woman, only because whoever cut the trailer had a memo in front of them that said, be like Marvel. I am convinced of that. Because every time you meet a new character, there's a joke that follows it. Hey, here's Aquaman, here's a joke. Here's the Flash, here's a joke. Hey, remember Batman? Here's a joke. And that was met with applause and everybody loving it. But again, I don't want to see DC become Marvel. I would rather DC be DC.
But Suicide Squad does look like there's jokes.
But hopefully jokes that kind of make you cringe, because they should be making jokes once they crush somebody's skull.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, these are bad people.
These should be sick jokes.
Absolutely.
So, Justice League, are these jokes funny? Do they land?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, you know, Aquaman is a tough character to take seriously. He always has been. And when you cast Jason Momoa from Game of Thrones, you've already, you're halfway there.
Yeah.
Because he's an intimidating guy. And at the end of the trailer, Bruce Wayne says to him, Arthur Curry, I hear you can talk to fish. That's pretty good. You know, because Bruce is not scared of him because he's Batman.
Yeah.
So the jokes were fine. It's just I wasn't as hyped over that trailer as I was Wonder Woman. I think it's the best trailer I've seen this entire year.
But thinking, you know, I can't help but remember the scene when Robert Downey Jr. Makes a wisecrack at Thor in the first Avengers movie. You know,
sure.
It's that moment again, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And I'm hoping that DC, if Suicide Squad does well and Wonder Woman does well, I just don't want them to basically chicken out and have Justice League be their version of Avengers. It should be their version of Justice League, which should be a little darker, should be a little more in your face. I mean, again, that's what DC excels at.
Okay. Well, I agree. I'd love to find DC find their own footing and not be Marvel, but Unlike you, I am one of the many who is not satisfied with Batman v Superman and would like to find a way into this. If we're going to be stuck with umpteen DC movies coming at us, let's make them agreeable.
Yeah.
So we'll just see, won't we?
We will, and you know, the, I think we need to end all of this in a galaxy far, far away. Something that that we kind of skipped over earlier. Let's end with Han Solo, young Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich, I believe is how you say the young man's name. We'll all know soon how to say his name.
We will go with that pronunciation.
But he was in Hail Caesar, the Coen Brothers film, and my pal Carl Middleman was after watching Hail Caesar, he goes, "That kid was the best thing in that movie, and he's going to be a star." Well, I don't know when Carl said he's going to be a star, he meant in Star Wars, but he is going to be the new Han Solo. Disney, wisely, is not just making a standalone Han Solo spinoff film, which is what they've been telling us for years. They've signed him for 3 pictures because they're thinking, you know what, let's go ahead and have the further adventures of young Han Solo.
Is one of those 3 pictures Rogue One? Do you think we are going to see him?
I don't think so because the timing doesn't work out. Rogue One ends 10 minutes before New Hope.
What?
10 minutes before A New Hope, which means if you know A New Hope, which everybody does, you know the ending of Rogue One. So Han's already fully grown there. He's already he's already had many adventures. So Alden will not be in Rogue One. I imagine the only other Star Wars character we will see in the younger adventures of Han Solo would be Chewbacca.
Perfect.
And, because we have to see Chewbacca. Now, what's interesting, on Revenge of the Sith, Yoda knows Chewie somehow, goes over to Kashyyyk, and they start talking.
Yes.
Right?
They do.
There's no Han Solo around.
No.
So does Han save Chewie's life and get the life debt after Revenge of the Sith?
Well, maybe.
He would have to, because look at the timeline. It's 20 years before New Hope, so Han would have only been about 9 or 10 then.
He would have been too young.
He would have been too young to save Chewie's life. Too young. So that's why we didn't see him yet. So I'm just trying to put all this together, because Chewie's like 600 years old.
It all goes together like clockwork, Max. It really does.
Oh, okay.
This is Star Wars.
Okay. It's like poetry.
Yeah, yeah. No, it all makes perfect sense. You just have to commit yourself to believing that.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for having me on to talk about the latest news out of San Diego Comic-Con. Thanks for editing this so we sound like geniuses. And go to ZekeFilm.org and read our stuff.
Exactly. Max on Movies at ZekeFilm.org. And we'll talk to everybody later.